well as Swell AA, and it's with real pleasure that I introduce Oscar Ansel of Illinois. Thank you.
Am I talking too close to this microphone? I want to say that it's a real thrill to be on this program this morning. It's a real thrill to attend this 20th anniversary convention. I've never seen so many sober drunks in all of my life. I was amused last night. We were all in the main convention hall, and Hank was reading these telegrams from all over the world. Very impressive. And the last one, he read that very sincere message from President Eisenhower. And a lady behind me said to her husband, "My God, I didn't even know he was a member." This morning, my wife asked me if I was nervous. A couple of other friends did at breakfast. And I said, "Hell no, I'm not nervous. Just help me find Keel Auditorium and I'll be all right." This is an AA open meeting. Typical of AA open meetings everywhere. There are thousands of groups around the world today, and I presume that all of them hold open meetings periodically. I believe that we hold those open meetings not only to welcome our wives and our families into our AA group, perhaps to educate, perhaps to inform. But I think AA open meetings have a larger significance. I couldn't help but think last night as I saw Lois and some of those wives sitting on the stage, some of those very faithful, steadfast people. Where might we all be today if they had lost heart? Where might we be today if they had given up the ghost and not stood by? And so I believe that in these AA open meetings, it's our way of AA saying thank you to our wives, mates, and friends. I've been a member of AA since 1946. I came in after 8 or 10 years of frightful drinking, climaxed by the war. I didn't know for a long while what alcoholism was, except that I knew that I was getting into trouble. I tried to control my drinking, but that wouldn't work. My wife, my family, my close friends tried to help me. My good wife tried everything. She tried drinking with me. She tried not drinking. She tried scolding, babying, nagging. None of those things would work until I was ready. Well, I got a hold of the AA program comparatively easy, and I went five and a half, 6 years. And then something began to happen in me. I didn't recognize it then, but something began to change in me. And I got back in the old driver's seat. And before long, I was experimenting with a new type of crutch that I believe was far more deadlier than any alcohol I ever drank, and equally a serious problem. I began the use of Benzedrine and drugs, and I carried this on and off for 2 years, unable to break the spell. It's a deadly serious thing. We alcoholics, I know today, cannot take any medication of that sort. We cannot take any Benzedrine or any barbiturates or any goofballs. None of these things can be left to our control. And I went down in a big heap. How to get off of these things that I knew was wrong, I didn't know. So I resumed drinking and drank on and off for another 6 months. Until, thank God, I came back into AA. Now my remarks this morning are intended, shall we say, for a fellow with a little AA mileage who begins to lose a little interest in the meeting, begins to take his sobriety for granted, begins to get back in the driver's seat, slowly loses interest in the newcomer, begins to believe in these principles and recognize them, but fails to put them into practice. For the old-timer like myself, who may be thinking that that 24-hour plan is a mighty good thing for the new man coming in the door and somebody else having trouble, but, well, I've got a little time. That's not causing any trouble. Well, I believe that that's a very dangerous attitude. Our inventory should catch that. Mine didn't. I was the big wheel in AA, and I didn't need a little inventory. I was too busy taking others. When it comes to that step five, well, I heard the confessions of a lot of men and a lot of women, a lot of wives. But for me, well, no, I didn't need it. I too much of an ego, I guess. I believe that I had taken for granted my sobriety. A sobriety that I thought at one time in my life was impossible. Like everyone here, every alcoholic here, I didn't see how a person could live without drinking. And having been taught that in AA, and over a period of time, I began to take that thing for granted. I guess that's just plain insanity. Began to take AA for granted. And before long, I was in real trouble. Deep trouble. But thank God for a lot of wonderful AA friends, I got back on the track. And then another problem came along. AA this time was different. A lot of water had passed over the dam. The 12 suggested steps were there. The slogans were there. A few new faces. But what about this new enthusiasm? What about those old evangelistic days? I went through that like you. Well, I knew I had to have that somehow if I was going to make the grade. As I looked around me and down in our neck of the woods, there wasn't very many who had drifted away, had come back with any consistent, constant sobriety. And that kind of worried me a little bit. So I began to work with a few of these newcomers. And through the grace of God, I met three or four men who chose to hang on my arm as they were getting their sobriety. And that enthusiasm, and their enthusiasm, began to pay off. Once again, I reminded myself that I am an alcoholic today. I do that every morning. I don't take AA for granted. I don't take my sobriety for granted. I believe we get a spiritual reprieve in a sense. And as long as I stay close to that program and try to practice these principles in all my affairs, I'll be all right. So naturally, I was thrilled and honored when I got that little letter from New York. In fact, the man, the very fine member of AA, whose place I'm taking, because he wasn't in the best of health, is none other than George Madden. I seem seated right down here. Another old friend of mine. But I'm glad to be here today because this type of meeting inspires me. I hear these speakers, and I'm going to carry away from this thing an awful lot. And I know this morning that from the three fine speakers on our panel, I will gain, and I'm sure you will. Thank you. The first speaker at our open meeting this morning in the Opera House is a very fine gentleman from Dallas. I asked him how he liked to be introduced, and he said, "Just call me Ole." Everybody does. Ole's been around this thing for a long while, 9.5 years. He's a member of the first panel. If you'd like to hear how they do it in Texas and see a very good example, just listen to Ole. Ole?
Thank you very much, Oscar. Good morning, everybody. My name is Olin. I'm an alcoholic. And not wanting to appear hard-headed, but I have already heard quite a number of stories from alcoholics, and I'm not going to say much about mine. I'll just say that on October the 11th, 1945, the Texas-Oklahoma football game, my last drunk started. And I had my last drink 4 months later. I stopped on November 11, 1946. All of the speakers that I have listened to, quite a number of them have left this impression with me, that so many of their sponsors brought this message of recovery to them from right out of the blue sky. I recall last night in that beautiful tribute that Bill paid Ebby. Bill didn't ask for any help. Ebby seeked him out. I have heard numerous talks since here along that same line. My sponsor is sitting out in the audience. And he brought that message to me. He did not wait for me to call on him. I ran into my sponsor on a street corner one day in Dallas in the rain. And he tried to encourage me to go to an AA meeting with him and try it out there in that drizzle to explain briefly what in a few short weeks it had done for him. Having been on drunk with him for a number of years, I could see that there had been some sort of a change. But anyhow, he left me with these words. If you ever get to where you can't go another foot, call the lab. Well, it so happens, as most of us do, I reserved that call until about 2:10 a.m. one morning. Never in daylight hours do we get these calls. But I've always said about him that had I called the fire department at the same time, I believe he would have beaten the fire department there. I just heard Oscar make a remark about enthusiasm. That is the kind of enthusiasm that we definitely had during our younger AA days. Some of us get away from it, and it is dangerous. Now, in these talks that I have heard here, and so many of them have had the message brought to them without any encouragement, reminds me of a long, long time ago, and Bill was talking about this also last night, that when he and Dr. Bob got together 20 years ago on Mother's Day, now they must have done quite a bit of talking. They must have burned a lot of midnight oil. But it's significant to me that the very first thing they felt a need of was another drunk. And those days, they were not looking for another drunk that had asked for help. They were looking for another drunk, period. It's true that nothing was formulated, no plan, no steps, no tradition, no big book. But they felt an immediate need for another alcoholic. Call the hospital, talk to a nurse, went out to see Bill Dodd. Number 3 member of Alcoholics Anonymous, now dead about 18 months. But after those first calls, no more drinking for old Bill. Now, while our big book, and it might be mentioned in one or two of our steps, does indicate and suggest very plainly that the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is to carry this message to alcoholics who want it. I have often thought, how are we going to know whether or not that person whom we think to be alcoholic, how are we going to know whether they want it or not unless we say something to them about it, even in a guarded way? Certainly, if the alcoholic is in a hospital, he's sort of at our mercy if we elect to put ourselves out to call on him. Certainly we have him almost in a trap to where he's got to listen to a portion of our story. And if we do a good, honest, sincere job on that first meeting, it has been proven beyond question of doubt to all of us that that alcoholic has maybe a little bit better than a 50-50 chance to recover as you and I did. And then another significant thing about the various talks I have heard is this. And it should bring us all back to size. If we'll stop and look and think about what we are hearing meeting, we're hearing meeting commemorating 20 years of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we who have appreciated approximately half sobriety in that young 20 years of AA. I have been sober almost half of the life of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we consider a little bit further that, in those days, every step they took was uphill. Every nose and finger was pointed downward at them. The stigma in those days just had to be running riot. And if we will compare those days with what they are now and what they were when we came in, it's astonishing. Today, with all of our groups, with all of the favorable publicity that AA has, with the stigma practically removed in every little grassroots community, with a wonderful reputation, we're known as people that don't spend any money, we ask for no money, and that we do get a hold of, we furnish it ourselves and are apologetic even about that. But don't forget what has gone ahead of you and me for us. My God, today, with all of the facilities at our hands, with everything made so easy for us, with everything possible done for us, we bellyache, we backbite, we criticize. And we find it hard on a lot of occasions to get along with our fellow alcoholic. When we compare that with what an effort it was for those first members of AA to get number three members, number four, number five, and 15, 30 in a couple of years, 4 hard years of working uphill for you and me, to get 100 members. And still, while it isn't necessary for each of us to love the other member of AA, I have always found with me that even though I don't like you, even though I might not want you in my home or to take you to dinner, there comes a time in our association that I begin to respect your effort for sobriety. And in almost every instance, if I'm in mind to, I can learn to like you and respect you and call you a friend if I put out that effort. Wynn said yesterday, if we are honest, if we keep open-minded, and if we are willing. That's three great words in AA. The fundamental teachings of AA have not changed one iota. Thank God for that. And I think that Dr. Bob feels that in the convention in Cleveland several years ago, when almost his last words were a prayer that it forever be kept simple. I'm quite sure that these steps will never be changed. And I'm quite sure that the 12 traditions have been cut down to size. They're understandable. And not enough of us give them the attention that they're deserving of. When we stop to think that even though we're celebrating 20 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's been much less than that since our 12 steps were written. They were written over in Brooklyn at Joe's hometown in 1937. 38, I think it was. And the book was written in 1939. We can remember, some of us, not me very much about it, when the Saturday Evening Post article came out in 1941, very, very few members, deluge of inquiries overnight, husbands, wives, parents, sweethearts, what can we do about our alcoholics? There was a small group of broke people banded together and doing their damnedest to help each other, always seeking out another drunk. They had no steps to go by, mind you, when they got those first 100. They were working more in the dark than you and I are today. But they got this thing going for you and me. The steps we accepted, the traditions we accepted. We got our big book, and a lot of us are prone to say, sufficient for me. A lot of us say, after a year or two of sobriety, I have my feet back on the ground. I have my sense of values back. And I believe that I can take care of it from here on in. And we become lax. We do not accept the responsibility that is ours. The responsibility of each of us to carry this message to other alcoholics. And I'll add here, who want it. But let's not overlook too many opportunities to carry the message to alcoholics, maybe as a surprise, as it was brought to so many people here. I've heard them say so. It was a surprise to me that day in Dallas when Al said something to me about it. I surprised several people in hospitals and in jails by saying something to them about it. It's a wonderful feeling to feel like that we have just a little part in anybody's sobriety. There's no finer feeling on the face of this earth than to have received a call and to have been on the verge of turning that call down. And then finally let that conscience talk you into saying, I'll be there. Too often we want to know what the condition of the alcoholic is. How long have you been drinking? Are you too drunk to talk now? Could I see you tomorrow? Too often we are looking for an excuse to either get out of it completely or to let somebody else do it. I don't know what your individual story would be. I don't know whether somebody surprised you with an AA visit or not. But if they did, you will never on this earth forget it. Quite true that a lot of us go to AA and ask for help. Particularly where there's a club room, I think we'll find that to be true. In Dallas, we're fortunate in having 6 club rooms. We have 24 groups. As Dick Breen said yesterday afternoon, I am a club room man. I have had to have a little club room, regardless of how humble it was. I have always needed a little place where I could go and call Paul. A little place where I could go and find that understanding that I needed so bad. A little place that I could go and feel at home and at ease. Because all of us had been misunderstood so long. Nobody could understand what we meant when we said we had to have one more drink. But here we walk into a group of people that know just exactly what we're talking about, what we're thinking about, and how we feel. And here for the first time, we get to where we can let our hair down. We get to where we're placed in a position of even wanting to tell the truth. We get to where we become willing to accept the guidance of some sort of a higher power. It's made so simple for us because there's no regimentation in it. No place in there is there a must. You must do this. You've got to do that. They leave the gates so wide open to God. It's so simple for you and me who have either strayed away from their God or who have never had Him at all. They make it so simple to get into that groove. So easy for us to understand that thing that we all need so much. Most of us need it daily in our sobriety. A lot of us in the beginning needed it by the hour almost. And it's here for all of us. The rankest unbelievers on earth have come into AA and have learned to depend upon that thing that they call God. We've heard Him referred to so many times. The man upstairs, some have said Butch, some have said partner. But each of us in our own way have accepted Him, have found Him, and can use Him. He's been good to all of us, and I, for one, used to be afraid of Him. I had learned way back in my younger church days. Because the preacher stood up in the pulpit and kept hammering the fear of God, he indelibled on me that it was a vengeful God and in my drinking days, which started quite early and lasting for 26 years, I got plumb away. And my way back could have been made much easier had I had that feeling that it was a vengeful God that I was dealing with. But he explained that to me pretty quick. And it wasn't too hard for me to understand. Those experiences, they found out the hard way for you and me in AA. Those early day guys and gals are the ones that we owe our life to. They have set this thing up for you and me. And Bill, this is his second occasion, to my knowledge, that he's tried to turn the rings of AA back to AA members. He's making an effort now to get out of the driver's seat, so to speak. Bill's not like you and me. He can't plan just for today. He's got to look way out there in front. And he's still planning for 1965 in his thinking. You and I, one day at a time, but not for Bill. And in his go-round, let's try to make it a little easier for him. We can. He's got a hell of a job. He's trying to get out of that seat and give it to us. He says, we are of age, are we? Are we proud of what we as individual members of Alcoholics Anonymous are doing and have done? Have we carried our load? Have we done our part concerning these 12 traditions which are so important for our unity? It's been often said that if we ever disintegrate, if we ever fold up, if we ever go to pasture, it'll be from within. Nobody is going to tear our simple program down from outside. Can't you see, can't you feel the necessity for closer harmony, better unified, clean, honest, willing thinking? Can't each of us, when we go home from this great convention, carry one little message of friendliness to everybody in their group? Can't they let down those bars of resentment? Can't they be happier with one another? Can't we get back the way they had to do it in the old days? And can't we be thankful that we do have to get back? I've enjoyed being here so much. I've enjoyed saying these few words. God be with all of you and help you. And when you do get home, please hit that knee and say, God, let me do my part that our group will once again be in harmony and try to carry this message of recovery and unity to all alcoholics. Thank you very much. Holy, that was fun. And we thank you very much. A number of you may be wondering what this light businesses up here. And just for fun, you know, this gave me an idea a few moments ago. Red, which these lights on and off, so I'm not supposed to see them. This is a speaker's traffic light. This is going to give you some ideas. You see that little light there? Well, that's a warning. You have a few minutes to go, and the stop is red. Got the red on. Everybody's got the idea. Well, you know, I was just thinking, we have, unlike myself, some long-winded speakers,
in our Springfield group and some of the groups around our part of the country. And I just got to thinking, if I could be seated back at one of our meetings with this little box, couldn't I have a hell of a lot of fun? And you know, I further got to thinking that if every one of us had one of these things, that it would be just about the nicest thing that has happened to AA since Bill Wilson. Now it is my pleasure at this part of the program and my privilege to introduce a very fine lady from the South. From Decatur, not Illinois, but from Decatur, Georgia. Neely has been a very good member of AA for a long time, 12 years. And the good members down there loved her and respected her so much that they sent her to New York to serve on the second panel. Neely?
My name is Neely Daniel, and I am an alcoholic, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous of the Atlanta, Georgia group. I didn't know there was another Atlanta until recently when I visited Texas. And when I said I was from Atlanta, well, I had to say Georgia because it was Atlanta, Texas. Texas has everything, I think. When Marion wrote me and asked me if I would take a part in this program, I wrote back and asked her how many speakers we would have and how long we would have talked. And she said there would be a chairman and three speakers, that I would be the ham of the sandwich. How little did she realize what kind of ham this sandwich was going to have. When I left home in my late teens, a little South Georgia town, to go to Atlanta to teach school, my mother thought that a young girl so inexperienced would surely come to some bad end going to the large city. I feel sure that would have been true had not I found Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, soon after I married, I began drinking. It was during the prohibition days, and I learned to drink home brew. After I learned to drink it, I liked it, and I could never get enough. I guess I would probably have gotten into trouble at the beginning, except there's just not enough to be had. For a number of years, I drank beer and no noticeable bad results from it. But when I did start drinking whiskey and gin, well, then my troubles really did begin. That was when things of value in life took secondary place in my drinking. My health was very bad. In the summer of 1940, I went to the mountains away from my family to spend the summer. I drank every day that summer, sometimes a little bit and sometimes too much. But because I felt so bad, I had to drink in order to feel better. When I came back home in September to begin teaching again, I found that I could not teach. I was in no condition to teach. Instead of facing the situation and doing something about it, I just went to bed.
and stayed in bed, and I rolled, and I tossed, and I tumbled. And I drank when my friends would bring me something to drink, or when I could get it from other sources. I did this for a month, and then I agreed to go to a hospital. I did not know that my family had decided that they would commit me if I did not agree to go. I went to Asheville, North Carolina, and stayed 4 months in Highland Hospital. I got built up physically, and even when I left the hospital, I told the doctors they needn't worry about me, that I could take it or leave it alone. But now since I was well, it wouldn't be any problem to me. But I came home from Asheville and started drinking again. John, my husband, my present husband, and the only one I've ever had, stopped drinking when he saw what it was doing to me. And when I came home from Asheville and started drinking again, he was really crushed and he couldn't understand it. And neither could I. I continued to teach for several more years. But finally, the struggle became too great. It was just not worth it. I had wanted to stop a year or two before I did. But from the advice of the doctor, I kept on because he realized what would happen when I did stop. And that did happen. I went into seclusion. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to see anybody. I just wanted to be left alone with my bottle. I remember on a September afternoon, it was a Sunday afternoon in 1943, I was suffering a terrific hangover. It was Sunday and I didn't have anything to drink, and John was at home and I couldn't go get anything to drink. When I heard someone at the front door say, men do not usually call on the women, and the women do not call on the men. But since we are here, won't she come out and talk to us? Olin was speaking to you about something like this. One of these men who answered John's call, thinking that he was the one that wanted help, was our beloved Sam Daughtry, who was one of the founders of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went into the living room, and as confused as I was, as Sam told his story, I felt that at last I was understood. That he had certainly felt like I was feeling then, or he couldn't talk like he was talking. His story interested me, and I realized that there were others that like I was. Sam advised that I go to a hospital and then come into Alcoholics Anonymous, which I did. But we learn so many things through experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know and I know that I couldn't come in and stay sober because John wanted me to stay sober. I thought that I was just a little bit different, that under certain circumstances and certain conditions, now that I knew what this was all about, that I could drink successfully. And I tried it. No circumstance or no condition would let me drink without getting drunk. But on my last drunk, I realized without a shadow of a doubt that I was an alcoholic, that my life was unmanageable. I had been going to AA. I had been hearing the speakers. I had been listening to the program, and some of it had rubbed off on me. So since I had accepted this fact and admitted it, I had to make the decision what I wanted to do about it. And I made the greatest decision, I think, in my whole life when I decided that I did want sobriety more than I wanted to drink. And I had been told, and I knew, that if I asked God for help, that I would receive help. And I did. And I became willing to turn my will and my life over to Him as I understood Him, because I had not been able to do this my way. I also made the decision that I would not worry about whether I would ever drink again, because that had thrown me several times. But I would do like they told me to do and work this program one day at a time. I finally slept that night, and when I woke up the next morning, I had the most wonderful feeling that that day I would not take a drink. And you know I've had that feeling every morning since. So I really came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Being the timid person that I am, I sat in the back, but I did listen. And I did apply what I heard to myself. Then I gradually began to ask questions, not publicly, but go to fellow members that I thought could help me. And I spent hours and hours and hours in the club room. And I found that this program would work for me. It would work each 24 hours that I wanted it to work. I took an inventory, and it was hard to take. For all my life, I had crammed things down inside of me, and there they had lain and smoldered, and they had to come out now. And I found many things that I had to work on. But with the help of God, I did begin working on them. And I know the feeling of relief that comes when we make amends for our wrongs. And I know the clean and honest feeling that I had when I admitted to myself, to God, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And I found that this program could work. For me, it could help me with my problems. My problems that were big and my problems that were small. But if I took the inventory, continued to take the inventory, and used the prayer and the meditation, that I got an answer. And when I feel that I'm not as serene as I should be, I do not have the peace of mind that I would like to have, I know how to get it. I have found in this program just what to do to recover that. I find that this program opens avenues for me that if I travel, enrich my life. And if I detour, as I so often do, I have the guide to lead me back to the right way, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do hope that through indifference, that I will never lose interest in this program. For if I do, it will be because of something that has happened inside of me that I do not want to happen, and not with the program itself. I hope that I will be eternally grateful for that which has been given to me. Thankful that I have so much. And yet, I am able to help by any word, act, or deed. Another alcoholic who is still suffering, then I am doubly blessed. And all of this brings me into closer fellowship and closer companionship with you wonderful AAs. And it makes me want to say that when my summons come to join that innumerable caravan, that I will meet those AAs who have gone before me, and I will be there to greet the ones who come after me in that greatest fellowship of all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Neely. And now we come to the last speaker this morning at this AA open meeting. I'm very pleased to tell you that Joe is here from a comparatively unknown city in the East. I think they call it Brooklyn, and I think he has a few of his fans here this morning. Joe has been a member of AA for a long, long time. He told me as we came in this big hall this morning, Joe looked at this big stage, this sea of faces, the balconies. He says, you know, this is a big place, all right, but there's just one redeeming feature that we're not in that convention hall next door. It's a real pleasure to introduce Joe Duffy of Brooklyn. Joe?
My name is Joe Duffy. Now I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from the Brooklyn Group of Brooklyn, New York. Our leader said, I was a member of AA a long, long time. And I was surprised after listening to the speakers. Oh, I'm in 8.5 years. I'm the baby of this group. But I can assure you that I'm a better baby than I was a man. I, too, like Goley, have my sponsor in the audience, and also the man that I consider my daddy in AA. I never had the pleasure of speaking before an audience such as this, and I can remember my first talk in AA simply because I didn't want to talk. I was president of our Russell Society, of our church, in our parish, and through the excessive use of alcohol, I withdrew from people, and I never called a meeting for a whole year because I didn't want to face people. And naturally, that was with me when I came into AA. So, my speaker kept asking me to talk. So finally asked, what have I got to talk about, John? And outside, all my drinking was around my business. I happened to be a funeral director. And that's some business to drinking. So he should talk about one of myself, about my business, about an old Irishman in the neighborhood by the cemetery, who the two sons couldn't get to stop drinking. So they thought that they would scare him and throw him into an open grave. But I tried it on a Sunday night, and we woke up Monday morning with this hangover. He looked around and he seen these familiar headstones. He about knew where he was. But he looked into the open grave, and he said, "If I'm alive, what am I doing here? And if I'm dead, why do I have to go to the bathroom?" I came from a family who had my brother, Jim, raised south in the neighborhood. We're still in this neighborhood. We've been in it, in the voting district, over 100 years. He raised himself in it, got a nice business in it. But he lost it and died an alcoholic. And at the age of 17, he was then very active. At my age of 17, Jim was very active. And I had to go in the business, and they put a high hat on me at 17, directing funerals. And it's needless to say that the business ran down. It ran down for 6 calls in 1 year. We lost everything. I sensed that I had a good father. And I took a hold of it. And at the age of 20, I had my own shop. Being that my brother was a drinker, I thought it was necessary to drink in my business. And that I continued to do. And I done a pretty good job with it. I drank around the clock at any hour, but I always managed never to go on a call with drink, nor with the sign of drink. And my drinking I did after services. And I raised that business up from 6 calls to 317 in 1 year. I joined everything and anything that I could meet people. In fact, I was the only Irishman in a German singing society. I was my drinking until it came the day. The things that I took pride in started to happen to me. I started to show on call drinking. I started to meet families with the sign of drink on me. And it's needless to say that I didn't like it. They say that this is a progressive and an insidious disease. Our case histories prove it. Some of us don't have to go all the way down. I know I, for one, didn't financially. But this thing had such a hold on me, I didn't realize it. And at the age of about 33, it had taken over of where I put it first. I put it before the business that I like. I put it before my family and my children. And I went through 3 years without keeping a record. And that's when I like to think, when I crossed this so-called imaginary line that we speak of in AA. I was a fortunate alcoholic in this respect, that I had a phobia against owing money. When I got paid for the work that I did, I would pay my bill. But what was left, I would spend. And I like to say now that we as alcoholics don't spend money. We throw it away. After the 3 years, by now my wife had left me to not start drinking. She could not put up with me. And the help that I had, the older help, the same thing prevailed. They couldn't put up with me. My daddy tells me I was a cutie. I hired young help, real young, that could go 2 and 3 and 4 days with me without going to bed while I drank. But the very thing that I built up, I now seem starting to fall down. People were saying, Joe is a nice fellow, but I'd like to have Joe, but he's no longer reliable. Joe, you used to take people out of their difficulties. But now you are putting them into it. Why don't you go away? I didn't want to go away. I was afraid that I was crazy. I settled that I was nuts. Because I could run a business, I could make a dollar, but I couldn't drink. So there must be something wrong here. So going away to me wasn't the answer. I was afraid. All the things that we alcoholics get had already been into me. These fears that we speak of, I was full of. So I wouldn't go. So finally, I gave in to Father Riley, and I went away to a health farm. And that's why we're so fortunate in AA to know, through our stories from this platform, that we can't lick it. Because if ever a guy tried to lick it, I did. Nobody was going to take that right away from me that I... Yeah. After going to Brown, I enjoyed 3 months period to survive. I could get up to Brown, I could get through that walking exercises and the rub downs and the massages and all this business, and I felt like a million dollars. When I come out of there, I felt, well, I don't want to bother drinking now, later on. And when that 3 months, I couldn't get over it. I had to drink. After 2 years of going to Brown, one of the things set into my mind again was that my drinking was caused by the course of my lack of education. Because up at Brown, you get nothing but college graduates, all the big money people of the country, and I was just plain Joe. I said, I guess that's the reason I couldn't drink. I lacked education. And I settled that in my mind. And it took AA to get it out. Because I accepted this thing as a school. And I'll never forget the night I sat at the meeting when I said that to myself. I said, you blame your lack of education on your drinking. Accept this thing as a school, it was so confusing to you. And go 8 years to grammar school, go 4 years to high school, go 4 years to college, take a postgraduate course, and by then you'll be dead. at least you'll die sober. See, that's the funny thing, you say, die sober. You know, we won't convince ourselves we're an alcoholic. No. Me, I handle more death certificates. Cause of death. Chronic alcoholism. Acute alcoholism. Demented peacock, pseudo-alcoholism. But that wasn't me. That was the poor guy. It could not penetrate this brain that I had trouble with liquor. So I went 5 years to Bill Brown. I made 20 trips there. And in these 3 months period of sobriety was the first time I learned that I was making money. Because I was saving money when I was sober. We kind of tightened up after we got sober. And I was catching this money away, you know. And when a 3 months had come up, I'd have it in a safe deposit box. Getting drunk, I'd go up and I'd get it. And as I said before, we don't spend it, we throw it away. Whatever was there went. I got wise to that after a while, when I was drunk, he'd come on me. So I'd go down in the cellar, and I'd take the key to the safe deposit box. I'd be half drunk, knowing that I'd go up to that safe deposit box. And knowing I didn't want to, that I'd get rid of that dough, I'd just sit down the cellar, and I'd half drunk, turn the key around, and turn it around, and then tease it. And I couldn't find it then until I got sober. And that cellar never got such a nice cleaning, I can assure you that. So after these 5 years of Bill Brown, I kind of sensed that I did have a problem. Here I was on the way back, doing nice, and in these times of sobriety, it was, good morning, Mr. Duffy. You look good, Mr. Duffy. I like that, you know. The other way, look good, bum. What if you're going to get sober, you know? I don't like that kind of stuff, but that's what was happening. So finally, our medical examiner came in to the city of Brooklyn, and he said, Joe, why don't you try God? What do you mean? I'm a fairly good Catholic. Oh, I don't mean it that way, he said. Give of yourself and go into the church and talk to God. It doesn't make sense to me. Well, I did tell the priest that worked with me 7 years, who, by the way, one night put me in the hospital, and thanks to God, I punched him in the nose. Yeah, those are the things we do. So he said to me, well, Joe, maybe he has something. Get on your knees and make a promise to the Blessed Mother, drunk or sober, that you'll go to communion once a month. So that I did. And the third month, again, I went drinking. I couldn't get over that third month. That's like a lot of the guys in slips can't get over the third month. I know. So anyway, I went to confession, and he said to me, knowing you as I know that you'll go to the altar rail in the morning. I did. And from that point on, I got 9 months period to sobriety. And after the 9th month, being that I hung out with drinking people, and liked drinking people, and associated with drinking people, I wanted to be with them. So the only way I could get with them was drink with them. So back again I'd go and I'd drink. After 9 months. And now I had reached the stage in my drink and in this progression of where I was a common nuisance. I wasn't wanted. So I used to have to pay for my company. So I should accumulate a little dough in these 9 months, you know. And I'd just sit down in all the dives and pick up the unfortunate, six of them, five of them, anybody that listens to my book. Ride with me for a day, 2 days, 3 days, take them up to the country. Needless to say, when I went up, the wife had to go out. It was just a drinking bout. Well, I got that I didn't like that. And just 3 years prior to coming into AA, I decided that the first drink threw me. I'm one of the ones that knew the first drink threw me. Now, I said, if I can stay away from the first drink, I may. I won't drink the water, but if I want it, to stop drinking. So I got it into my head, if I could get a year, I'd be made. And I tried awfully hard. I couldn't get over the ninth month. I was now in the hospital stage. I was making the hospital. I was sick. I got into begging for whiskey. And I needed medication. So I seen my sponsor, who I thought would dry 18 months. He said it out of the street. But he didn't tell me at the time because I didn't hear it. I thought it was 18. And I said, Jack, what's keeping you sober? He's in our neighborhood. He said, Joe, I've joined AA. I said, not for me. Knowing nothing about it. But I said to him, just the fact that I can't drink, there's no reason why the other fellow can't drink. He said, Joe, that's exactly how AA works. Oh, I said, they're not reforming. He said, no. Well, I said, all right, the next time I get drunk, I'll look you up. No, he said, I was going to get drunk again. Always afraid of that next drunk. Always afraid of it. So thank God I did. He had one awful job getting me into the hospital. And when I come out of the hospital, the day that I come out, Dr. Silkworth, Lord be good to him, I try to talk with him. And he convinced me that there was no religion in AA. Well, that I liked. And I was fighting with it. Yeah, I was afraid. But I understood it was worth it from the people that visited Knickerbocker Hospital. So, when I went out, I said, are you sure, Doctor, there's no religion there? I don't want to get mixed up in any religion. I'm satisfied with my own religion. He said, you can rest assured of that. I said, all right. So in my confused mind, that night they closed the meeting, which we in our business figured was the Protestant part of the Lord's Prayer. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. That's, uh-oh, a Protestant outfit. I don't belong to you. So, I again closed my mind. I said, I don't belong here, but I'm going to see what's keeping these guys sober. So I went to my daddy and I said to him, how long are you sober? He said, 4 years. I said, no, no kidding, without a drink. He said, yes, without a drink. Wow. My brother, how long are you sober? He said, well, a little over 3 years. He said, no, no kidding, without a drink? Yeah. He said, how long are you sober? 3 months. Oh. I don't want you. I wanted these guys that were a year. So I stuck around, and for 11 months, I might tell you one little thought again, you don't have too much time here. But I was in 5 months, and I got a terrific case of dry gin. And I was one, on account of my business, I didn't want people to know I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I respected the anonymity part. I couldn't pronounce that word what I meant. I respected the anonymity part of the program. And I just wanted to go to my meetings, and that's all, period. Although we have 17 in Brooklyn. So I get this terrific case of dry gin. And Helen said to me, Lord of Mercy, he said, Joe, why don't you call up your sponsor? like they say at these meetings. That's where I stood to take the non-alcoholics to the meeting. And I said, oh, shut up, leave me alone, I'll be all right. But it didn't work that way. Okay? I was still nervous. So I called up Jack, and he took me to a meeting that night. But for some unknown reason, I come home feeling good. So I said, to hell with the anonymity. If it works that way, I want it. Okay? But I did, here's what I found out. Why I drank when I didn't want to. It took me a little time. It took me to go constantly to meetings. The lift concrete opened up. And finally, after taking the steps, I found out the things that was within me that I didn't want to admit, but to look in the mirror at myself and say, Joe, is there any jealousy in you? Yes, there is. Is there any hatred in you? Yes, there is. Is there any envy in you? Yes, there is. Dishonesty? Yes. I had to tell myself. After I told myself, I told them to other people because I discussed them. I brought them out into the light. And then I was aware of them myself. And instead of them throwing me, I used them constructively. Where before they threw me those four. Today I still have them, I'm still the same Joe Bessie. But I know it today, because I found out the meaning of shortcoming, which I didn't know, which is in our seventh step. And I heard at a meeting one night a man say the meaning of shortcomings was lack of. And I said, what do you lack, Duffy? I lack the very teachings of my church. I lack patience. I lack charity. I always thought charity was putting your hand in your pocket and handing out some dough. Getting your name on a civic list for 100 or 200. That was ego. Charity is in giving of yourself. And AA offered me that opportunity without any angle. Humility was simply to become teachable, to listen, to learn, not know it all. Meekness and mildness. Those are the things that I lack. AA has brought me back that today I enjoy life. The fears that I had, the greatest part of them are gone. And for one thing today, time passes. I know what I'm doing. And I'm not too much interested in the material things of life. I'm interested in living, as they taught me, live and let live. And the feeling that I have is beautiful. I used to say when they'd say in AA, this is a beautiful life. I'd say, what's so beautiful about sitting on your can here for an hour? That's what I used to say. But it opened up. And I can say to you that an alcoholic without AA is like a man without a country. Thank you.
Half an hour and hear that.
have any announcement to make?
Thank you, Oscar. I should have made these announcements at the beginning, and I'm sorry, but perhaps there are some people here today who didn't hear them made yesterday, and we learn in AA that repetition is a good thing. So if there are any members of the press here present, we ask that they respect the anonymity of our AA speakers and do not print their names. The opinions expressed here are, of course, the opinions of the individual and not of AA as a whole. Luncheons and dinners will be served in cafeterias downstairs. The meals will be hot and moderately priced. Lunch counters and snack bars are open around the promenade. I'm sure you've all seen them. Tape recordings are being made of all meetings. And if any of you wish a tape recording of a meeting, will you leave your order at room B? It's marked convention headquarters. We want to have some idea of how many people want them before we'll be able to fix the price. And now, I want to thank Oscar and Neely and Ollie and Joe for this wonderful AA meeting. And will those who care to join, and we will say the Lord's Prayer together. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,